It was a really sort of 50-50, take it or leave it, you know, no big deal sort of scenario. Kind of like when you get a bill in the mail and you should always pay it straight away, but you think, ah, that'll keep.
The world can be a bit of a demanding place, but today we're talking about the urgency that comes from within. When you gotta go, you gotta go. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Samantha Groth. Faith Chaza tells a story about finding clothes and where your body fits.
Finding an appropriate outfit for my cousin's autumnal wedding feels impossible. The Crayola blue, ultra-skinny fit suit I have for such occasions has been vetoed by the matriarchy. It's too boxy, it'll be too warm, it's too punk, too not for the cathedral, too what will people think, too it's too gay. Which is ridiculous, of course. To be a lesbian, I'd first have to be a woman. Plus, what would that make Frankie, the very male straight boy I dated, other than the boy who nicked my collection of op-shop bow ties? It should be noted that the 2018 Mother Knows Best collection does indeed include a woman's suit, as well as a fair number of short dresses that show off my curves. But me? In those? A continent away, and confident that I am the greatest top man model that never was, shame is never a function of my sartorial choices. Fear? Not since I stopped taking early morning train rides home after late night adventures with a girl. With my paisley tie, lilac skinnies and collar clips, I felt like a clear target in the brightly lit carriage. Sitting in the corner, shoulders slumped forward and low and my earphones blaring, I projected my best, invisible late night commuter vibe. I'd raised my phone in front of my face so I could look past it, beyond to the teens in their newly discovered Adidas sweats and unironic baseball caps, or the buzzcut boys and docs on their way home from the soccer. Careful not to stare, I'd note the details of their surly expressions, fuzzy chins and tight, buff shoulders, like little wind-up toys ready to go. Just in case I ever needed to make a statement, or find myself coaching the police sketch artist. But nothing ever happened, not to me at least. But there are times I find myself wishing I wore something a little less me. Like when the conservative school I'm working with asks if they can have a more traditional consultant. Is the issue my queerness, my femaleness, my deceptively youthful face, acne and all? Or, at an after-work function, when the well-meaning waiter sirs me. I don't mind, it sounds a little less awful than ma'am to my ears. And if I'm lucky, none of my colleagues will have noticed, but they always do. Today it's a group giggle and a shared conspiratorial eye roll. For my benefit? Because it's ridiculous that a complete stranger couldn't tell that I, in my stock take special smoking jacket, am not a man. Not that they've asked. Not that they're sure. Or shortly after that, when I need to pee. I know, no one enjoys the putrid stank of fortnightly rinsed bar bathrooms, but it's a potential audience that makes it less uncomfortable. Quiet panic slowly rises from the pit of my stomach, squeezed up as my bladder crowds out my other organs. Pulling my glass back to my lips for the smallest sip, I consider the options. The women's bathroom, the obvious choice, maybe. Generally cleaner than the gents, but significantly more likely to lead to curious stares. Aggressive stares. Reminders that this is the women's bathroom. Concerned inquiries. Are you lost? Less concerned, are you trying to sneak a peek? But it's not that bad. If I stand up straight, chest out, maybe I'll pass. Part my lips, trying for feminine, landing on adolescent tantrum. I'll take a deep breath before I swing the door open, lightly though. I don't want to knock into anyone in the inevitable queue. If I remember, hook my thumb around my bra strap. See, I'm wearing one too. And only make eye contact with the space above people's heads. Yeah. That sounds good. I ease myself off the bar stool and head towards the marked door. But as I take tiny steps, working up my courage, a group of girls move ahead of me, I mean women. I don't want to stereotype, but in their high heels, pink nails, and business chicks conference swag bags, I worry they may not be up for a conversation about the spectrum. And prejudging myself through their eyes, I take a step back to look for the men's. An almost guaranteed splash zone. The urinal is an obvious non-starter, but there might be a cubicle with my name on it. Hopefully not my phone number. It will be gross. There might be pee on the floor, but they'll all be too busy averting their gaze to notice anything untoward. Another deep breath and I step in, just as Matt tries to step out. Faith? After what feels like half an hour of just standing there, I take a step back. Shots. Two awkward tequilas later, I'm still desperate to pee. I've done two casual sweeps of the bar looking for the accessible bathroom. It must be here. It's a code standard, right? Maybe? I don't know. But I have been holding for over an hour, which means I'm stupidly close to UTI territory, which means I need to leave. Or speak to a human about the fact that I need to pee. It's 15 minutes later, and I'm back at the office zipping up my fly. Washing my hands, I catch sight of the relieved grin on my face. I reach into my pocket. I need to share all of this adorable. Hashtag bathroom selfies. But I've got a text from Mom. WhatsApp, actually. I bite my lip and open it. How about we compromise, it reads. You can wear your suit, but no jacket. And I get a final say on the shirt. So I look back up to the mirror, to a full grinning face, and send a snap of that as a reply. She didn't say anything about a tie.
That story was by Faith Chaza, with help from supervising producer Alison Chan. This fiction piece was originally written for an event by the Finishing School Collective at Parramatta Artist Studios in Sydney. You're listening to All the Best. All the Best is a great place to learn how to produce audio documentaries. If you pitch an awesome story to us, we'll even pay you with the supervising producer, so the story doesn't end up going down the toilet. Email us at contact@allthebestradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Teek Hogg went to Japan as an exchange student and rediscovered his connection to a childhood acquaintance while stuck in a public toilet. A heads up, this story contains a lot of mention of poo and the language warning.
So I grew up in quite a religious family. My dad was a Presbyterian minister. My mum married a Presbyterian minister. So quite naturally as a child, I went to church most Sundays, had a pretty good handle on the Bible stories, that sort of thing. And in general, I guess you could say I had a pretty good connection with God. He seemed like a nice chap, the kind of guy you'd want on your side. Fast forward a few years, I'm 17 and I'm on a high school exchange, staying with this lovely little host family in Toyohashi, Japan. And I think at this point in my life, the whole God thing had kind of worn off, perhaps for more than one reason, but my parents were thousands of miles away. You know, I was by myself as a teenager. Having God there might not have been very convenient. Somewhat ironically, my host family just delighted in taking me to shrines and temples almost every weekend. And on one particular weekend, we set off for what I'd been told was a large shrine with many foxes. That's what I'd gathered. My Japanese was pretty rubbish. I left the house that day kind of needing to poop. Not like really needing, you know, it was a really sort of 50-50, take it or leave it. You know, no big deal sort of scenario. Kind of like when you get a bill in the mail and you should always pay it straight away, but you think, that'll keep, you know. Maybe if I don't think about it, it'll go away. So anyway, we arrive at this shrine, and it was indeed a big shrine, almost like a big cemetery full of hundreds of these stone fox statues. It was quite nice, and I understand there's a few of these shrines throughout Japan. I didn't quite gain a full understanding about what it all meant, because not long after I arrived, this poop that I had on board started to transition from a theoretical to a more tangible realm. But no big deal. There was a cafe sort of gift shop thing in one corner of the shrine. I figured they'd have a toilet, so I set off and I found one with a sign on it in English, presumably just for me, that said closed for weekend. I panicked just a little bit. You know, I was confused. I was like, why does the bathroom need the weekend off, you know? Like, what's it got on this weekend? On top of that, I was thinking, if this thing gets any worse, where's it going to happen? Because the drive to the shrine had been like an hour long on a Japanese autobahn, six lanes wide, and it was just flanked on either side by rice paddies. But it wasn't even rice season, so there was nothing in them except like knee-deep water as far as the eye could see, nowhere to hide. And I was just thinking, shit, if I've got a poop in there, it's going to be a horrific spectacle for so many people. I kind of waddle back to my host family, and I make some tactful indications that this shrine has been marvellous. It's definitely my favourite one, but it's probably time that we got back on the road. I didn't tell them about the whole closed bathroom, had to poop situation. The few people that I've told this story to have asked me, why won't you say anything? And I think being in Japan is kind of a lot like being in church. Like, everyone is just so nice and they're so polite and they spend half their time apologizing for things that probably don't really matter. You're just on your best behavior in Japan and you don't make a scene. And I didn't feel like I could unload this problem onto them. And even if I did, you know, what were they going to do about it aside from freak out about it as much as I was? And on top of all that, I think I was still at this point retaining some confidence, you know? Like, I hadn't shit myself in some time. Like, I had no idea what my limitations were. And, you know, maybe I'd be able to sit it out. Back in the car on the way home, and any confidence that I had has completely gone. The poo wasn't progressing in a typical linear fashion. It was, like, spiking exponentially. Some kind of dietary reaction, maybe. I don't really know. I'm sweating, and I've got goosebumps, and I'm nauseous, and my host mother's saying something to me in Japanese, and I'm just like, hi, yeah, whatever. I'm trying to meditate, you know, I'm not really listening to him. All of a sudden, we're on an off-ramp going off this motorway, and it took me a moment or two to realize what I'd just agreed to. It was a detour to the largest hyakuen store in Japan, like the largest $2 shop. And within a couple of minutes, we've arrived there at this massive, like, strip mall-sized $2 shop kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I'm suddenly thinking, shit, this might be my saving grace. Huge store, got to have a huge toilet. And we pile out of the car, and just off to the side of the main entrance was the universal sign indicating toileting facilities. I sort of abandoned my host family again. And there I was, this massive toilet block, like 30 stalls. I don't think I could quite say I was relieved at that point. Not quite. But I figured, you know, I've won the toileting lottery here. Like, this is a jackpot. Until I realized that every cubicle was occupied. It was like every bathroom in Japan had the weekend off, except for this one. This is quite critical by now. And so I'm furiously like checking under the doors to try and find one that doesn't have any feet under there. And I found one, and the door is actually slightly ajar. And so I just pounce on it and burst on in there. And I'm greeted by a typical Asian squat style toilet. It's a hole in the ground. With the biggest pile of poop in it I will ever see in my life. I can say that with confidence. Like, this thing wasn't full. That would be a dramatic understatement. It was just an atrocity. The flushing mechanism was just dangling by a thread. But I knew there were no two ways about it. I was contributing to this thing. At the same time, I was kind of like, well, there's been a bunch of dudes that have come in here before me and I've seen this thing and they've just gone, oh, all right. You know, I was just the next one in line. And I'm thinking, you know, when I'm done, I'm going to go next door into the shop and get a little New Zealand flag for the summit of this thing. But as I'm, sort of saddling up, I realize that I'm going to compromise the hygienic integrity of my trousers on the hinterland of this, like, the foothills of this mountain. I'd have to take them off. And so I'm up again and I've ripped one of my shoes off and I'm struggling to get a leg out of these trousers. And I'm experiencing highly elevated levels of rage and frustration at this point. Like, Japan has the most advanced toileting technology in the world. And here I am getting undressed to try and get a poop done. I guess I just lost it. And with the fury of a person about to shit themselves, I slammed my fist down on the flushing mechanism. Yeah. Fixed it, didn't I? Yeah, I was that toilet tech they needed the whole time. There was just an explosion of water. There's that whole fight or flight thing, you know? I'm a flyer. Like, there is no way I was diving on that grenade. But with nowhere to fly to except straight up the walls of the cubicle. So I'm hanging now from the cubicle with this Mount Vesuvius of poop just erupting beneath me. The shoe that I'd taken off, gone. Straight under the door, it was out of there. The sheer weight of the poop pile was exploding outwards under the cubicle walls. I remember the screaming. It came in a Mexican wave from the adjacent cubicles. And so there I am, just hanging, and I'm so alone. I felt like equal parts, like victim and offender. And I was just an emotional ruin. I was reduced to prayers. I prayed. I remember joining an exodus of Japanese men in the bathroom area. I remember one man was vomiting in the sink, or at least trying very hard to vomit in the sink. I remember exaggerating a display of shock and bewilderment in the hope that no one would suspect the 6'3" foreign kid with one shoe on. I did find my shoe on the way out, and I just ran into the store and hid amongst the aisles. Eventually my host family tracked me down and they were none the wiser to what I'd just been through. I don't think people really pray for miracles because they're like, that's quite a big ask, you know? You don't want to stress the big guy out, you know? And who am I to pray for a miracle anyway? But I think I kind of did pray for a miracle that day, and I actually got a couple. The first miracle was that despite riding the crest of this tsunami, I came out of that bathroom block, to the best of my knowledge, without a single bit of shit on me. The other miracle that happened, and the answer to a question unanswered at this point, is what happened to the poo that I was trying to do the whole time? And it just disappeared. Like a magic trick, it just vanished. A scientist might say, oh, well, that was a biological reaction to the stress and trauma that you experienced. It was PTSD, you know. You were scared shitless. My dad might say it was divine intervention. As for me, I don't know where it went or who may have taken it. But when I think about sort of the outcome of that horrendous affair, to me it was just a fucking miracle.
That story was told by Tig Hogg, and the story producer was Johanna Bell. It was first told at Spun, a live storytelling night presented by Story Projects in Darwin. You can subscribe to the Spun Stories podcast via iTunes or your favourite podcast player. To find out more about the Spun Storytelling Project, visit spunstories.net or look for them on Facebook and Twitter. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Our Victorian Stay Coordinator is Beck Fari. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Jordan Fennell is our SYN Community Coordinator. Matilda Fay is our Social Media Producer. Tegan Nichols compiles the show. And I'm Samantha Groth, your host. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so when you gotta go, subscribe to us on your podcast app and take us with you so you can listen to us on the loo. We won't tell.